Hello and welcome to Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 5th of May 2008, brought to you by azonano.com. My name is Stuart Cameron. In this edition of Azo Nano News, as well as bringing you the latest news from the international nanotechnology industry, we'll hear how researchers are powering nanomachines with rocket fuel, with amazing results, how scientists are growing trees out of nanowires, and how silver nanoparticles might be doing their job just a little too well. In this week's Azo Nano interview, Cameron Chai speaks to Rosie Hicks, Chief Executive Officer of the recently launched Australian National Fabrication Facility, or ANFF. These stories and more in this edition of Azo Nano News. In a major step towards a practical energy source for powering tomorrow's nanomachines, researchers in Arizona report development of a new generation of sub-microscopic nanomotors that are up to 10 times more powerful than existing motors. In the new study, researchers point out that existing nanomotors, including so-called catalytic nanomotors, are made with gold and platinum nanowires and use hydrogen peroxide fuel for self-propulsion. But these motors are too slow and inefficient for practical use, with top speeds of about 10 micrometers per second. Researchers supercharge their nanomotors by inserting carbon nanotubes into the platinum, thus boosting average speed to 60 micrometers per second. Spiking the hydrogen peroxide fuel with hydrazine, which is a type of rocket fuel, kicked up the speed still further to between 94 and 200 micrometers per second. This innovation offers great promise for self-powered nanoscale transport and delivery systems. Since scientists first learned to make nanowires, the nano-sized wires, just a few millionth of a centimetre thick, have taken many forms, including nano-belts, nano-coils and nano-flowers. But when University of Wisconsin-Madison chemistry professor Song Jin and graduate student Matthew Bierman accidentally made some pine tree shapes one day, complete with tall trunks and branches that tapered in length as they spiraled upward, they knew they'd stumbled upon something peculiar. Jin and his team revealed just how curious the nanotrees truly are. In fact, they're evidence of an entirely different way of growing nanowires, one that promises to give scientists a powerful means to create new and better nanomaterials for all sorts of applications, including high-performance integrated circuits, biosensors, solar cells, LEDs, and lasers. Until now, most nanowires have been made with metal catalysts, which promote the growth of nanomaterials along one dimension to form long rods. While the branches on Jin's trees also elongate in this way, growth of the trunks is driven by a screw dislocation, or defect in their crystal structure. At the top of the trunk, the defect provides a spiral step for atoms to settle on an otherwise perfect crystal face, causing them to stack together in a spiral parking ramp type structure that quickly lengthens the tip. UK microfluidic specialist Dolomite have announced that they've been working with Newcastle University as part of a project to explore the application of microfluidics for the synthesis of nanoparticles for use in biochemistry. Microfluidics, often called lab on a chip, is an exciting new field of science and engineering that enables very small-scale fluid control and analysis, allowing instrument manufacturers to develop smaller, more cost-effective and more powerful systems. With lab-on-a-chip technology, entire complex chemical management and analysis systems are created in a microfluidic chip and interfaced with, for example, electronic and optical detection systems. For this project, Dolomite created a custom glass microchip with multiple reaction chambers. This was manufactured using processes such as lithographic patterning, isotropic etching of glass substrates, and the accurate thermal bonding of glass substrates. Scientists from all over the world will meet in London on the 28th and 29th of May 2008 to discuss how nanotechnology can contribute towards reducing testing on animals. The application of nanotechnology is currently revolutionising medicine, and this two-day conference, the first of its kind in Europe, will examine the role that nanotechnology could also play in improving or refining the development of alternatives to animal testing whilst maintaining safety. Animal testing is costly, and there's a great deal of research on finding viable and effective alternatives. Despite large reductions in animal testing since the early 1980s, due to improved in vitro methods, levels remain high with over 3 million procedures in 2006, and results can't always be extrapolated to humans. Sessions will cover toxicology and drug design, tissue engineering, other novel model and testing strategies, imaging and diagnostics, and regulatory and legal issues. Researchers at the University of Manchester have produced tiny liquid crystal devices with electrodes made from graphene, an exciting development that could lead to computer and TV displays based on this technology. Research from the School of Physics and Astronomy and the School of Computer Science report on the use of graphene as a transparent conductive coating for electro-optical devices and show that its high transparency and low resistivity make it ideal for electrodes in liquid crystal devices. Graphene was discovered at the University of Manchester in 2004. This incredible one-atom thick gauze of carbon atoms, which resembles chicken wire, has quickly become one of the hottest topics in physics and materials science. The Manchester research team has now demonstrated highly transparent and highly conductive ultra-thin films that can be produced cheaply by dissolving chunks of graphite, an abundant natural resource, into graphene and then spraying the suspension onto a glass surface. Although revenues for micro-electro-mechanical systems, or MEMS, reached record levels in 2007, aggressive price reductions, legal wrangling and rising pressure from competitive technologies took their toll on the MEMS industry, according to Bourne Research. The market research firm reports that while sales of sensors for industrial automation surged, it wasn't enough to make up for significant revenue shortfalls in other core segments. Revenues for MEMS as a whole rose just 5.8% in 2007 to $8.6 billion, and the outlook is mixed. Bourne cautions that the resulting commoditization of MEMS sensors may result in near-term revenue paralysis, since unit shipments currently aren't sufficient to offset the lower prices. Those in the know have already turned their attention to industrial automation, and the combined use of GPS, RFID and MEMS sensors are projected to find the greatest traction in commercial equipment. Tellingly, 5 of the top 10 suppliers of MEMS devices are leaders in industrial sensing, most of whom are missing from other widely publicised rankings. A breakthrough barrier technology from Singapore A*STARS Institute of Materials Research and Engineering protects sensitive devices like organic light-emitting diodes and solar cells from moisture 1,000 times more effectively than any other technology available in the market, opening up new opportunities for the up-and-coming plastic electronics sector. A team of scientists from Singapore's Institute of Materials Research and Engineering has developed a new patented film that has the highest reported water vapor barrier performance to date, as tested by the UK Centre for Process Innovation. The tests have shown that the new film is 1,000 times more impervious to moisture than existing technologies. This means a longer lifetime for plastic electronic devices such as solar cells and flexible displays that use these high-end films but whose sensitive organic materials are easily degraded by water vapor and oxygen. A novel three-dimensional screening method for analysing interactions between cells and new biomaterials could cut initial search times by more than half. Researchers from the National Institute of Standards and Technology and Rutgers University report the technique, an advance over flat two-dimensional screening methods, enables rapid assessment of the biocompatibility and other properties of materials designed for repairing or even rebuilding damaged tissues and organs. In what may be a first, the team demonstrated how to screen cell-material interactions in a biologically representative but systematically altered 3D environment. The pivotal step in the experiment was the collaborators' success in making so-called libraries of miniature porous scaffolds that are bone-like in structure but vary incrementally in chemical composition. Knowing how changes in scaffold ingredients influence cell responses, researchers can devise strategies for developing biomaterials optimized for particular therapies and treatments. For years, scientists have known about silver's ability to kill harmful bacteria, and recently have used this knowledge to create consumer products containing silver nanoparticles. Now, a University of Missouri researcher has found that silver nanoparticles also might destroy benign bacteria that are used to remove ammonia from wastewater treatment systems. The study was funded by a grant from the National Science Foundation. Several products containing silver nanoparticles are already on the market, including socks containing silver nanoparticles designed to inhibit odor-causing bacteria and high-tech, energy-efficient washing machines that disinfect clothes by generating the tiny particles. The positive effects of that technology may be overshadowed by the potential negative environmental impact. Because of the increasing use of silver nanoparticles in consumer products, the risk that this material will be released into sewage lines, wastewater treatment facilities, and eventually to rivers, streams, and lakes is of concern to researchers. This week, AzoNano reporter Cameron Chai speaks to Rosie Hicks, Chief Executive Officer of the recently launched Australian National Fabrication Facility. They discuss how this government-funded initiative links centres of excellence and makes facilities and expertise openly available to all nanotech researchers in both academia and industry.
This is Cameron Chai from AzoNano, and I've got with me today Rosie Hicks, who's the CEO of the Australian National Fabrication Facility. How are you doing today, Rosie?
I'm well, thank you, Cameron. Good morning.
So you've just launched the Australian National Fabrication Facility. What exactly is that, Rosie?
The Australian National Fabrication Facility is providing a new capability within Australia for all Australian researchers to access leading-edge, state-of-the-art instrumentation for fabricating materials at the nanoscale. It links seven nodes that have existed previously within Australian universities, but importantly it provides the mechanisms for Australian researchers outside those host institutions to access the equipment.
And which universities are involved in the ANFF?
At the moment, the ANFF, it has seven nodes, but a total of 17 members are involved. Some nodes have got more than one member. So it's a very comprehensive list of our leading centres of expertise, including University of New South Wales, the University of Queensland, the University of South Australia, Macquarie University, the Australian National University, and the headquarters here at the Melbourne Centre for Nanofabrication through Monash University.
So you're pretty much based up and down the east coast of Australia?
That's right. We do have a collaboration with the University of Western Australia. That's accessed through Canberra.
So who are you guys set up to help, researchers and industry, both?
Well, in the Australian landscape at the moment, the figure is about 70 different research institutions and in excess of 50 companies with an active role in nanotechnology. 10 of them are listed companies. And in fact, researchers from any of those organisations will find capability within ANFF labs that will be of use to them.
So you don't discriminate whether people are from academia or industry, you're happy to help everybody out?
That's a really important message, Cameron. Yeah.
Okay, and you've also got, well, part of your organisation is the fact that you can supply facilities, knowledge and expertise to help people develop their technologies?
Yes, I think the key thing there is the expertise, the people skills. Typically within a university we have a fabulous centre of expertise and we have leading lights carrying out their own research programmes. Of course, the problem for industry is those guys aren't going to turn around and fix your problem for you. So the big difference here is that the ANFF provides in excess of 25 dedicated staff to meet the needs and support the projects of external users. And I think that's where the difference comes in making the equipment truly available.
So these staff will be able to help members of industry, for argument's sake, come in and fabricate their own nanomaterials and things like that and offer them the assistance to get their projects off the ground?
With nanotechnology projects, one of the things that we find is we have different process parameters. The key point with the expertise existing in the nodes is a detailed understanding of how changing these parameters affects the final material, whether it's, for instance, a compound semiconductor or the growth of single electron transistors. It's a true understanding of the physics behind it. that allows us to optimise the product. And, you know, it isn't black box, it's built on a good understanding of the science. It's making that available for industry and other applications that gives us the difference.
So what you're in effect doing is bringing a lot of the expertise out of the universities and making it more openly available to people who are involved in nanotechnology who might not already be within the university structures then?
That's right, and it's funded through a number of different sources. A key part of the funding is from the Australian government as part of the National Collaborative Research Infrastructure Strategy. It also receives considerable funding from a number of state governments, Victorian State Government, the New South Wales State Government, Queensland and South Australia, as well as the host institutions. Obviously, the local state governments are very keen on providing this funding to unlock capabilities for innovation and industry within each state.
Sounds like a great initiative for you guys and obviously for Australian nanotechnology as a whole.
Yes, well, it's early days, but we're very much looking forward to getting things moving in the next few months. And in fact, this week we were able to launch our website at ICON 2008, which gives a detailed listing of the instrumentation available. So perhaps we could guide people to the website.
And the website is?
It's www.anff.org.au.
So there you go. For all the Australian researchers out there who might be looking for somewhere to, for an outlet for their technology, they should go to that website. And anybody overseas who might be looking around for what's happening in Australia, maybe they should check your website as well.
That sounds good. Sounds like a plan, Cameron.
All right then, Rosie. Thanks very much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
And best of luck with the ANFF.
Thank you.
AzoNano Business News. BioNanomatrics Incorporated, a developer of breakthrough nanoscale whole genome imaging platforms for genetic diagnostics, personalised medicine and biomedical research, today announced the appointment of noted biophysicist Paul R. Selvin, PhD, to its scientific advisory board. Dr. Selvin is Professor of Physics and Biophysics and John Bardeen Faculty Scholar at the University of Illinois. The Centre of Excellence in Metrology for Micro and Nanotechnologies is pleased to announce the appointment of Paul Newbat as its Business Development Director. Paul has more than 20 years technical sales management experience, having worked for, amongst others, Phoenix Scientific Industries, Rheometric Scientific and Polymer Laboratories, which has brought him into contact with many of the centre's partners and target customers. Springer and the Nanoethics Group have released a collection of important papers addressing a range of near-term issues related to nanotechnology's ethical and social implications. The anthology Nanotechnology and Society, Current and Emerging Ethical Issues, tackles such contentious issues as environmental impact, health dangers, medical benefits, intellectual property, professional code of ethics, privacy, international governance, and more. SUS Microtech, supplier of innovative solutions for the 3D MEMS advanced packaging and nanotechnology markets, has entered a license agreement with Philips Research for a new enabling technology called substrate conformal imprint lithography. The aim of this cooperation is to bring an existing equipment platform with this additional nano imprinting feature to the market, enabling new approaches to large area imprint applications along with excellent printing resolution and repeatability. IBM and Matheson Trigas Incorporated, the largest subsidiary of Taiyo Nippon Sanso Corporation, Japan, announced today that they've signed a unique 4-year agreement to jointly develop new manufacturing materials and processes that will enable the next generation of semiconductor technology for 32 nanometers and beyond. The agreement marks the first time Matheson Trigas, Taiyo Nippon Sanso and IBM have collaborated on semiconductor technology. Well, that was AzoNano News for the week commencing the 5th of May 2008. If you have any nano courses, events or exhibitions you'd like to promote to a global nanotech audience, don't forget you can list them for free at azonano.com. To read expanded versions of the stories you've heard about in this podcast or to stay in touch with the world of nanotechnology, please visit www.azonano.com. If you'd like to send us feedback or let us know about nanotechnology news in your part of the world, please email us at podcast@azonano.com. I'm Stuart Cameron. Thanks for listening.